How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Radio. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to talk about today, including a big pay-per-view weekend, both traditional pay-per-view and internet pay-per-view. Last night was the ROH Final Battle pay-per-view, available at GoFightLive.tv. Replays are going to be airing throughout the week. A very, very good show. Awesome main event. Awesome stipulation that actually will be followed through on, unlike WWE and Survivor Series, as Kevin Steen lost to Generico in a, I guess it was a no-holds-barred match, a lights-out match, a no-disqualification match, a fight without honor. They brawled everywhere. They used everything imaginable. They took the craziest and, quite frankly, the stupidest bumps you've ever seen. And in the end, Generico got the win. Kevin Steen must leave ROH. And at least for the foreseeable future, he's not going to be back. So we're going to talk about that show, plus a show where stipulations don't matter. World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE TLC is tonight. John Cena is back just weeks after being fired at the Survivor Series in an angle where he never even left the show a single time. We're going to talk about the lineup for that show tonight. There's been a big change to the main event if you haven't watched SmackDown, and quite frankly, if you haven't, I don't blame you. We'll talk about that. We'll run down all of the matches on the show. Of course, it's airing moments after this show goes off the air, and Dave Meltzer will be live at WrestlingObserver.com doing play-by-play of the show as it goes along, so you can feel free to check that out. We've also got the results of the final ever WEC, which in the final match in a storied history of the promotion, the greatest kick in the history of kicks was thrown, and we'll tell you all about it, where you can see it, and a lot more. That's the WEC recap coming up here on the program. Tribute to the Troops was last night. We'll talk about that, plus TNA, SmackDown, and the Slammy edition of Raw. Some terrible television this week. We'll tell you about that. Joe signs with TNA. We'll tell you about a TNA star's business burning down. Shawn Michaels has talked about his future with WWE. There was a brawl at the Hogan wedding. We got so much stuff to talk about, it's ridiculous. Probably taking phone calls and emails as well. Going to be a big day, the final show before Christmas, so stick around. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. 2 hours of pro wrestling and MMA today. It's ridiculous, but we got more than 2 hours worth of stuff to talk about, so let's get right into it here. Mike, the ROH Internet pay-per-view last night, it was a big one. Three big matches, Davey Richards and Roderick Strong for the title, Generico and Kevin Steen in a mask versus career match, and all three Briscoes against the Kings of Wrestling and Shane Hagedorn. It was a fine night of action. And what did you think of the show?
I just, you know, for any criticisms you want to have of the show, you just got to first look at it and go, all right, for $15, did I get $15 worth of entertainment out of it? And the answer, like it is for all of these shows, yes. Yes, you did. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. When the world title match, which has been built up very well throughout the last couple of months, is really the third most important thing on there, but it's still something that everyone is looking forward to, you know you've got a pretty good show. And it was, you know, my criticism, I mean, it kind of started with the first match of the All Night Express and the two guys they were facing, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. I mean, they set the tone right away. I mean, talking about building up the crowd, they just, you know, exploded out and probably did a little bit too much. One of the longstanding criticisms of Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate and a lot of places like that were, yeah, maybe they did too much in a lot of these matches last night. But with that said, I mean, none of it was too, you know, over the top or anything like that. And it was just that you got your finishes that, you know, you had finishes that lead to something else going on almost all of the matches out of this too, and they just did a great job.
The only match I really thought they did too much was the Davey Richards Roderick Strong match. The opener, yeah, if somebody wanted to argue they did too much in the opener, I'd say okay, that's fine. But to me, the opener is the match where The opener and the main event are traditionally the two most important matches on the show. And, you know, Jim Cornette has a hand in the booking and that sort of thing. And so that's what they did, was they went out there and they tried to have, I want to say the best match on the show, but they had a hell of a match for the opener. And I don't really have a problem with them doing a lot in that particular match. In the main event, obviously, it was the culmination of a many, many, many year-long story. Steen and Generico had teamed forever, all over the country and probably all over the world. And then they broke up. They had a year-long blood feud in Ring of Honor, and it all led to this match here with the big stipulations. And to me, in a match especially like this, where it's mask versus career, at least Ring of Honor career, and you know one guy's leaving, and I think pretty much everybody knew it was going to be Kevin Steen, he's not going to be back for a rematch anytime soon. And this was the culmination of years and years of storyline. And so, to me, in a match like that, I don't care really if they kick out of every move in the world, because this is the end. This is the end. There's nowhere to go from here. So if you want to go absolutely crazy and do all these moves and all of this nuttiness, my complaint, if anything, in the match was that there were many, many times during the match where I was really uncomfortable watching it, because I knew these guys were killing themselves. And I don't like the idea of in 20 years going to Cauliflower Alley and seeing, for example, El Generico there not being able to walk. That's not my idea of a good time. And I've seen matches like Jimmy Jacobs and John Moxley, actually, at the Dragon Gate show, where they had a great I Quit match. They had a great I Quit match. And there was no moment during that match where they were killing each other. They worked a match. All of the stuff that looked dangerous really wasn't. And it was a good match to be able to enjoy it for what it was and not have to worry that somebody was really getting hurt in the middle of it. So that was my concern with Generico and Steen. Now, with the Davey Richards match, this one I thought they did too much, because when it was over, it was pretty clear that at some point they're going to have a rematch. And to me, when you kick out of every single finish and none of these submissions work, and you basically have to be kicked in the head 84 times and then pass out during a submission, you know, when that's your finish, where do you go from there? Like, how do you top that match? How do we make it believable that Davey Richards is going to come back and win next time, or that they can have a better match than they did this time? Maybe they can. I don't know. But looking at it, it was like, okay, if this is a chapter in a story, then my God, you did too much.
Well, yeah, and that was my biggest thing with it, too. I guess from ROH's side, you could say, well, we're probably not going to see that match for, you know, months and months down the line, you know, if they do have a rematch. So they do have an out there. But with that said, yeah, I think it did go on a little bit too long. In the case for me, when it went to Steen and Generico, though, it was just, I guess for me, it was that cringeworthy factor of just, I don't want to see someone get that badly hurt. And really, after the top rope brainbuster, which was, you know, brutal enough as it was, and they sold it, that's been the move. Generico hasn't been able to hit on Steen, and he hits it. I think they probably should have wrapped up a little bit after that, because, again, like, I don't think people, obviously they were very into it, but it was a lot like the Richards-Edwards match, where it was like, well, you know, they weren't believing that at the end that anything was really going to work, so you were wondering what it was going to be for, you know, Steen and Generico, too. It, you know, again, people were into it, and I was into it, but it was like, okay, well, this isn't going to do it, and it's just going to be a, you know, brutal body-breaking move, just to have a brutal, you know, body-breaking move.
What are your thoughts on the Briscoes match?
That
as a fellow man from Delaware.
That's it, you know, first of all, a lot of people I know, the big shocking thing was, oh my God, how could Papa Briscoe, especially after the interview that all three of them did with you Friday on the website, how could anyone boo these men? Look, it's a bunch of dudes who are rednecks wearing Confederate flags going up facing one of the most polished and, you know, popular tag teams in the world, and, you know, the best tag teams in the world when it comes to the Kings of Wrestling. They're going to have their fans. With that said, Papa Briscoe did more than, I guess somebody could criticize it, a non-wrestler did, you know, a lot more, but here's one situation where it's like, you know what, for what it was worth, it was absolutely awesome. Do I want to see Papa Briscoe out there every week on TV, you know, as Hawk with the Doomsday Device? No, I don't. or stunning Claudio week after week. No, I don't. But for the context of what it was, that was absolutely fantastic. That was just great, great fun. And again, a great close to another feud that had been going on for about a year.
Yeah, Papa Briscoe did a flying head scissors and a doomsday device. He got his hands on Shane Hagedorn, who he'd said some very naughty things about in the past. And I should note, as Mike mentioned, I interviewed all three of the Briscoes to build up this match. And if you want to listen to it absolutely free, go to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. It is one of the latest free radio shows that we are offering. There's no catch. Just go up there. The MP3 is right there. Download it, listen to it, and it's a fun time. But yeah, this was the thing about this show, and I mentioned this last night when I did a show with Dave, was that many times with pay-per-views, it's a fine line to watch. You don't want it to be, how can I say this? You don't want it to be too obvious where when the people buy the show, how do I even say this? Like, sometimes you give people expectations about what's going to happen. And sometimes there's expectations up and down the show. And if you deliver, like, every single one of them, then maybe the fans kind of think, like, wow, well, there was no surprises there. I knew everything that was going to happen. This is kind of lame. But at the same time, sometimes when you promise something, such as that the Kevin Steen Generico match is going to be a wild, violent bloodbath blow-off match, and that Papa Briscoe is going to get his hands on Shane Hagedorn and put a whooping on him. Sometimes when those things are promised to you, if you get the show and that is not delivered, like, for example, if they'd done a screw job finish in the Steen match, or if Generico would have gotten hurt backstage and they would have replaced him with somebody else, or maybe if Colt Cabana had turned on Generico for the finish of that match, or if Papa Briscoe hadn't shown up, or if Papa Briscoe had lost. You know, there are a lot of swerves you could have put on this show, and all it would have done was made people really mad. Like, the people that listen to the Briscoe interview or watch the video packages on television, I mean, they paid their money wanting to see Papa Briscoe get his hands on Shane Hagedorn. They paid their money wanting to see a blow-off match with a decisive finish to Steen and Generico. That's what they were promised. And for the people that bought this pay-per-view, that is exactly what they got. The only thing on this show that they didn't get that some people probably wanted was Davey Richards winning the title. But your favorite guy doesn't always win. That's not a swerve. That is not screwing people. So we'll talk more about this when we come back from the break. We'll get Mike's thoughts on it. Again, WrestlingObserver.com. Listen to the free interview. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're running down the ROH pay-per-view from last night and expectations, delivering what you are promised, and more. Mike, what are your thoughts on last night's show?
Yeah, what a novel concept in delivering those things. And not only that, where Ring of Honor usually deserves credit too is, what do you do next? Now, you know, because ROH has stuck to its guns, I mean, Kevin Steen, you won't see him there for a while. But you know what else? Will you see El Generico there for a while after the brutal beating he took, and you wonder what's next for him after this? You know, with the tag situation, we've gotten the blow-off now pretty much of the Briscoes' Kings of Wrestling feud. Well, that leads now into the Briscoes. They had an interview there, a long-form interview with Jim Cornette talking to the world's greatest tag team or whatever they're calling, Benjamin and Haas. So you know, they're going to face the Kings of Wrestling. You know, the All Night Express have got a tag title match in their back pocket. And it's, you get coming out of this, ROH delivers every week on TV what they say they are, which is a pro wrestling show. And they did it again with this pay-per-view. It did go on really long. Maybe, you know, again, some of the guys did a little bit too much or, you know, depending on what you think of Ring of Honor style of wrestling, but as far as a wrestling show and just as a TV show in general, it gave you what you wanted, plus leaves you wanting more and gives you an idea of where they're going next, which is good, which is something TNA, you know, doesn't do at all. And, you know, the too many swerves thing, Colt Cabana, again, even though I know Ring of Honor, when I saw him in there with the chair, and he's, you know, he's kind of backing up in a way where it looks like he could lay into Generico, which is, you know, with the TNA mentality he would have. you know, even though everybody knows Ring of Honor usually doesn't do those sorts of things, you know, you still got that little bit of a sinking feeling in the bottom of your stomach that he might, but he did it, you know, what he was supposed to do, which was waffle Steen with it and then leave the ring. And that's where TNA goes way too over the top with those types of things, and WWE does as well, and they don't put any thought into what comes next, and Ring of Honor did that, and that's what, another reason to me why the show was so successful, because we know a little bit of where they're going afterwards now. It's the same thing with UFC. After you see a fight, it's like, well, okay, who does the champion face next, or what happens to this guy after a loss, and you can kind of debate about it and think about it and see what comes next. People don't mind those things. You know, that's not too old-school pro wrestling. That's just easy to follow, simple things that people like.
I would guess that spot with Cabana was actually designed to get everybody thinking that was what they were going to do.
Because Cabana's so good. It was proven with his, you know, and after the first match on the show, which was meant to, you know, jack everybody up, whether they, you know, you think they did too much or not, to have Cabana's match out there next was great. The one with TJ Perkins, which was, you know, your scientific specialty match, and that's what it was. It was, you know, some people call it the 10-minute cold special or whatever, but, you know, that was great. And his ability to work in the ring and to be, you know, a showman and take him seriously in a lot of different roles was great. And the fact that he knew what to do as far as backing his body up, where it made it look like, yeah, he could hit Steam but could whip around and hit Generico, he deserves credit for that. And Carino coming back out again, too, how they tied that in. They did a very good job of tying all of these things in.
It's actually amazing when Carino came out. I don't even think about this. I'd have to go back and watch it. But it was like a big near fall and generic. It was the brainbuster on the top rope. Top rope brainbuster. He throws him back in the ring and he goes to make the cover. And all of a sudden he's yanked out of the ring and it's Steve Carino. And normally when a guy does a run-in, everybody stands up and they look to the back. But the people were so into the top rope brainbuster and the fact that Generico was going to get the pin that apparently nobody even saw Steve Carino sneak down to ringside. That's pretty awesome.
And that's how it, you know, that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to be. Where
he was like a magician.
When they go to that wide shot, especially in WWE, because of the way the lights are up and everything, that anytime anybody's doing anything in a WWE ring, there are people just staring at the ramp and staring at the Titantron, waiting on something to happen. And that's, you know, the epitome of success is when you've actually got people sold and that into it, where they have no clue what's going on except for those two guys in the ring.
It's like a magician using misdirection.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the pro wrestling sleight of hand, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be.
So, very good show. It's $15. GoFightLive.tv. Go check it out. We got some links on the front page if you want to easy access to the show to order it. So, check it out and fine action. The WEC show, the final ever event on December 16th. With the greatest kick of all time, main event was Ben Henderson and Anthony Pettis to determine a number one contender for the UFC 155-pound title. And they were having I actually had it 49-46 for Pettis, but apparently two of the judges had it even going into the fifth round. And it was a back-and-forth fifth round, and suddenly with moments left, Pettis, he began running. And then he ran up the side of the cage like a ninja, they said. And he ran up the side of the cage. He leaped off. He threw a kick. He hit Ben Henderson right in the face. Looked like it knocked him out. The referee rushed in to potentially stop it. But Henderson survived. He took a whooping for the rest of the round. Ended up losing the decision. But it was the greatest kick of all time. And it was such a fitting ending to the final match of the last WEC in history.
Absolutely, and the most disappointing part is the fact that there are people, and I saw at least one letter in the responses that have come back of, you know, this has been on free TV on Versus for a while now, and it never gets good ratings, and that's always the biggest sin, because from top to bottom, I mean, it felt as though you were stealing money from Zoffo when you watched these shows, because the fact that they were free were amazing, and that kick ending, you know, that show was, you know, it wasn't one of the greatest in WEC history, but from up and down, I mean, it was really good. There weren't any bad matches on the card or anything. For it to end the way it did was just, you know, that was just epic and very, very fitting for what the promotion was. And also, just the other thing about that show, too, Dominic Cruz I really like Scott Jorgensen, and over the last couple of shows, too, I mean, he's been an absolute beast. The way Cruz just pummeled Jorgensen, try to do Faber, kid Yamamoto first, because I think Faber can beat Yamamoto, then do Faber and Cruz, because it could actually be pretty ugly. No offense to Uriah Faber.
What do you think of Dominic Cruz?
That was... he's been very, very good anyway. I mean, good hands and everything. He's not Mr. Personality or anything like that, but he's been very, very good. He's come on, you know, a long way since, you know, losing the Faber. It's been, what, a couple of years now. Vicious. Just absolutely vicious, the way he was able to put it on Jorgensen. I mean, the total strikes, 283 out of 524 for Cruz. Jorgensen was 55 for 188. He never let up. He was like a machine, and he beat him every way possible.
You're a boxing fan, I know that. And I just find Cruz to be the most infuriating fighter in the world, and I'm begging for someone to just beat the crap out of him. Is it just me?
Well, I mean, all right, now on the Diaz scale of his stand-up...
I find him far, far more infuriating than Diaz. I'll tell you why. And you're a boxing fan. You know this. Listen, I did gymnastics when I was a kid. I did taekwondo when I was a kid. I've done karate. I've done jiu-jitsu. And, like, my whole life... And actually, this is one of the reasons that Frank Mir hates Brock Lesnar, actually. My whole life, it has been hammered into my head how important technique is. And how if you've got good technique, you know, a guy with great technique can beat a guy that just has strength or whatever the case might be. And how if you have good technique, you can continue doing this your whole life and be competent at it and this and that. And I see this guy Cruz go in there, and he's got the goofiest stand-up technique. All he does is jump up and down and move really fast and try to get wacky angles with his movement and that sort of thing. Which, don't get me wrong, it works great for him right now. Like, great. However, I think it was like the end of... I don't even remember what round it was, but I'm just looking at him jump around, and he's just jumping, and he's jumping and hopping and jumping, and it's just driving me nuts. And then, like, there's like a second left in the round, and right as the horn is about to sound, he just jumped in the air. He didn't throw a punch. He didn't throw a kick. He was just moving so much, and he just leaped high in the air and landed on his feet, and the horn sounded. It was like he was a rabbit. And I just, there's part of me that just goes, you know, yes, this works for him right now, okay? He's young, and he's fast, and he's got great cardio, and he moves a lot, okay? But it's just like Chuck Liddell, for example, and his wacky, wild, looping punch. Yes, that thing worked for a long time, because it was unorthodox, and nobody could see it coming, and he surprised people with it. But eventually, people watched tape of Chuck Liddell, they were like, oh, he's got this wacky, goofy looping punch that he throws. I'm just going to get the heck out of the way and knock this guy out. And Chuck Liddell began to get knocked out. And I think it's the same thing with Dominic Cruz. He is so cocky, which is part of the reason he's such a great heel. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a great heel. He's so cocky about how awesome he is. And the reality is, he's great right now because he's young, fast, and wacky. And the day is going to come, and maybe it's Uriah Faber. Uriah Faber, I think, I don't know if he'd have as much passion as I do cutting this promo here on Cruz, but Uriah Faber, I think, thinks roughly the same way I do, that this guy, all I need to do is look for this opening where his hands are down, like they always are, and he's jumping around, and I'll punch him in the face and knock this fool out. And I'm hoping it happens, and I don't know if maybe I'm the only one that has this passionate unhappiness for Cruz.
No, very likely not, because a lot of boxing fans, he's your Prince Nassim Hamed, who people were waiting to see always get knocked on his ass for having a quite the more unorthodox style, kind of like that. So, yeah, I know we're getting up against break here, but, when it comes to boxing, you know, in MMA, I kind of throw my hands up because guys get knocked out when they get hit with people's wrists sometimes. So when it comes to technique in MMA, as a boxing fan, I throw my hands up sometimes.
Anyway, we'll come back and talk more about this show. There was a lot of good stuff on the show. We've also got the TLC pay-per-view to preview. It is coming up immediately after this show goes off the air. So we'll give you all the matches on the show, talk about what you might expect and where they're going in the future. Coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Hour and a half, by the way. So we got a lot to talk about today, and we were talking before the break about Dominic Cruz and his technique. I was ranting and raving for a while, and I started ranting and raving off the air, and we began a discussion, and I was like, hold on, might as well talk about this on the air. So, Mike, Dominic Cruz, you were talking a little to me about boxing in MMA.
Yeah, you know, most of it just absolutely drives me nuts. Which, by the way, too, just back to the kick for a minute. I wonder how many, as far as stand-up goes, I wonder how many phone calls Duke Rufus has gotten this week after the Pettis kick. But, you know, most of the time, but as far as being I've been a longtime boxing fan, you know, since birth, so watching guys stand up in MMA, I mean, too often the time they're not protecting themselves. I mean, granted, there's a lot to think about, you know, in MMA as opposed to boxing, but just simple mistakes like, you know, not covering up, throwing punches way too wide, throwing, you know, punches with the wrong technique. I mean, it's just, it drives me nuts to the point where it's like, you know what, if something works for you, it works for you. I mean, Prince Nassim Ahmed, as I was saying, you know, towards the end of the break, had a style, but he had power in both hands where he would jump in and bounce in and work these weird angles and be really basically as annoying to boxing fans as Dominic Cruz is to you, but it worked until he got his ass kicked by Marco Antonio Barrera. Now, he had some personal issues and some other things, but it's okay, what do you do after that? And one of the big problems with Chuck Liddell, as you said, is he couldn't adapt with his stand-up. And it's, you know, if Cruz does get knocked on his ass, you wonder if, you know, it's how does he recover after that? And with MMA, I mean, as much as that style bothers you, if it's effective, you just have to say, okay, that to hell with it. If it's actually working for him, then it's working for him. Because a guy like Tim Sylvia, who actually had very good boxing, you know, when he was first going into the UFC, actually had really good, what you would consider, like, boxing type of technique and everything, and you see where that got him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, obviously, you can't go into MMA as a pure boxer because you're going to get killed. And even like a pure wrestler, I mean, there's amateur style wrestling, and then you've got to have you've got to tweak the style for MMA. You can't just be a pure amateur wrestler in MMA. But to me, it's like with boxing technique, I mean, you do have to have. I mean, you can adapt it for MMA, but you still have to have some of the basics. You know what I mean? You've got to have your hands up, you know, things like that. And when I see some of these guys, like, I don't know, it just maybe it's just the, like, people always, when I hear people say that Cruz has great stand-up, you know, I realize that he's beaten all these guys with his current stand-up technique. And maybe that does mean he has great technique. I don't know. But
it's
to me,
for him.
To me, he doesn't have great technique. He's just a guy that's, to me, he's relying on gimmicks to be successful at this point in his career. And at some point, this is going to backfire. Because there's a reason that these techniques are called unorthodox techniques. Because it's not how it's done, and there's usually a reason for that. You know what I mean? These are all terrible analogies, but I make the analogy for pro wrestling where, you know, sometimes you can do something that makes absolutely no sense and it surprises everybody. And the first time you do it, maybe they're like, oh my God, that was really cool. But, you know, after a while, you see it four or five times and it's like, okay, this isn't so cool anymore because there's a reason that things weren't done that way for 100 years. You know what I mean? So I just, you know, this is working great for him now. But there's going to come a day where there's going to be another guy who's really fast and who has a lot of movement and maybe is really tall and has a long reach and all of these things that Dominic Cruz has. And they're going to have great technique and they're going to just destroy this guy. And then the question is going to be, what do you do now, Cruz?
Well, and that's the thing with his ego, too. I mean, depending on when that happens, because he's had a pretty good run now in his last, you know, 5-6 fights, whatever it's been now. You know, it's if you do get beat with what people have pointed out to you, you know, could be a weakness for you, it's definitely how do you respond after that.
Let's talk about the rest of the show here. I just want to move on very quickly. What else did we have on there? We had the Kamal Chalarus fight with Bart Palaszewski, which was a very close fight. I had it for Kamal. Doc Hamilton, ironically, was the only guy that had it for Palaszewski. And what were your thoughts on the fight?
Well, that kind of surprised me, too, because it was kind of thinking, you know, with the round system and everything, and it's been, you know, you've talked about with Dave on previous shows about, you know, who the odd man out would be when they look at, like, judging what the judges do. You know, he would be the one that would be looked at as the odd man out. And in this case, I kind of think he would be in the position to be the odd man out, because I thought, actually, Chalarus swept the fight.
You know, I just thought of another analogy here. I'm still thinking about Cruz. There's a saying, at least in our jiu-jitsu school, I don't know if this is worldwide or anything like that, or nationwide, but the joke is along the lines of, what's the most dangerous thing in jiu-jitsu? And the answer is white belts, because you get these guys in, and they've never done any jiu-jitsu, and they don't know how to relax, and they get all explosive, and they get all wild, and you put a gi on them for the first time, and they're doing all of this wacky, goofy stuff, and sometimes they can really surprise you. Like, you can get a pretty darn good jiu-jitsu guy and put him in with a white belt, and the white belt's so wacky that he'll, like, do this goofy guard pass, or he'll do whatever this and that, and you'll be surprised. For a little while. That's the key. For a little while. But as soon as all of these unorthodox, goofy tricks are figured out, which if you're pretty good, doesn't take all that long, it's curtains for this guy. But you know what I mean? It's like that with any sport. You know what I mean? You can take a black belt in karate, or a great kickboxer, or a great boxer, and you put someone who's a lot less experienced in there, and they can be so goofy that they can surprise you. That's why there's upsets, obviously. And, you know, eventually the good technique is going to win out. And I don't know what brought that on, but that popped into my head right there.
You know who else had good technique? Don Cerrone had good technique calling out.
Yes,
was it Don Cerrone? Who was it? They had the big call out of Cole Miller. It was Cerrone.
Yeah, it was Cerrone wants Cole Miller.
There's another thing, not to compare WEC and Ring of Honor and everything, but you know, if you get a chance to watch Ring of Honor on Monday nights, like everything makes sense, and you know what you got going out of it. You know who the good guys are, who the bad guys are, what the feuds are. You know, you got guys calling each other out. They have it planned out. I don't know if they ever planned these things out in WEC and UFC, but you would figure that they did. You know, we bitch about it with Strikeforce when it comes to hyping up their own shows and how they do interviews and the point that they put in interviews and things like that and what they ask after fights. Don Cerrone, Cole Miller's got a fight coming up, but he still wants to fight him anyway because he beat Leonard Garcia. And it was just like, again, sitting there watching that, it was a good week for things making sense, you know, if you didn't watch Raw or SmackDown at least. You know, it was a good week for things making sense. It's just, again, how simple is that? How simple is that?
Yeah. I think guys are starting to figure out, you got to have an answer when they ask you who you want to fight next. You have to have an answer. This deal of, I'll face anybody that they want me to face. And listen, I've talked to people in UFC, and I've been down there for a lot of events, and listen, especially if you work for UFC, you should know this. The people that are in charge of putting together fights, I know that it seems like they would want to hear that you're willing to fight anybody, but their job is to make fights, and it actually makes things a heck of a lot easier for them if you go out there and you challenge someone. They like that. They like it when, after the fight is over, you have a guy you want to fight next. That makes their job easier. It gets people interested in the fight. So, you know, if you're a fighter, don't go out there and just say, I'll face anybody, thinking that you're going to get in good with the guy putting the fights together. Because it's not going to work. You need to go out there and have a guy. If you want to go up to the booker beforehand and say, hey, if I win this fight, is there anybody that you think that it'd be good for me to challenge? Great, do that. But have somebody in mind where when they put that microphone in front of your face, you got to realize that that microphone in front of your face, you're getting free commercial time. And if you're not a businessman, I guess you wouldn't understand this, but fighters should be businessmen as well. That is time to promote yourself. That is time to sell yourself. That is a time to make some money. For example, Dave mentioned last night, you know, the idea of Cole Miller and Donald Cerrone, that ain't a main card fight. That's an undercard fight on a show. However, Donald Cerrone goes out there and has a great fight and then challenges Cole Miller. I want Cole Miller! And everybody hears it. Then it's like, huh, you know, maybe we should put that one on the main card. And now, this guy's making more money. So, think of this as a business. You're getting a camera on you and free commercial time to promote yourself and what you want next. So make the most of that 30 seconds.
Yeah, and tie those, you know, comments in with a two-minute video package with music when you announce when they're going to fight on, you know, even as a preliminary fight on whatever the next show is going to be. I mean, it just, it's not that hard. I mean, that era of MMA is, you know, well, I'll fight anybody, you know. That's done and gone. It's 2010. I mean, it's the people that don't do that are the same ones who were so upset that Brock Lesnar was going to the UFC. I mean, Jesus, it's I know you don't like some of the things that with boxing and other things like that and in pro wrestling, but you don't have to be a D-bag about it, but you can call people out. You can do it the right way. I mean, look what Uriah Faber did in the pre-show and what Torres did in the post-show when it came to the WEC show. I mean, they weren't obnoxious about it, but you have to sell yourself. You have to keep yourself relevant, you know, keep your name out there, and that's the only time, for the most part, you have a chance to do it, at least on a grand scale. Take advantage of it, and a lot of the blame, it's not just the fighters. A lot of blame goes on to these managers, too, because fighters are going to be fighters. There are some guys who are far more charismatic than others, but you know what? It's not the UFC's job to spank in your ass and to keep you going. It's your manager and the people around you, too, where, again, you know, you need to work on some of these skills. It's not as important as is it in fighting, but as far as taking care of your money and a lot of other things, as MMA continues to grow and more money is involved in it and more media is involved in it, you have to start getting smart about these things.
And you know what? MMA fans are not going to want to hear this, and maybe actually everybody would disagree, but I firmly believe this. Make stuff up. You know what I mean? If you got somebody you want to fight and there's no beef, then make up a story. Just go, there was a UFC after party and Cole Miller was hitting on this girl and it turns out it was my wife. Now I got to lay a beating on this guy. You know what? Who cares? You know, just make something up and get fans interested in it and get fans going, man, I can't wait to see these guys pound on each other. And in the long run, you'll make plenty of money in this business. So that's my feeling right there.
Yeah, and even for old school MMA fans, I'm not sure how many people Frank Shamrock really deep down actually hated.
Probably almost none. But actually, I bet there were a few. But not a lot. Not a lot. All right, the WWE TLC pay-per-view is coming up today, and I suppose we got to talk about that. So I'm stuck in Briscoe mode. I apologize for that, everybody. But let's talk about TLC. We've got a big show here.
Jim Beam Black, I guess.
What was that?
Instead for the Christmas party, instead of the rum, you'll have Jim Beam Black.
Oh, I will. I'll have plenty of stuff for the Christmas show. We've got a four-way tables, ladders, and chairs match for the championship. It is Kane, Edge, Rey, and Alberto Del Rio fighting for the title. Originally, it was Kane versus Edge and Rey versus Alberto in separate matches, and a lot of things went down. There are a lot of people in WWE that realize that Kane and Edge as a feud sucks. There are also, by the way, a lot of people in WWE that realize that Edge is coming off poorly and coming off as a heel, so presumably something will be done about that, and there are long-term plans for Edge to turn back heel, but problem is they don't have enough baby faces on SmackDown, so I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but at some point it will. But they had that match, and then Rey and Alberto was a chairs match, and they didn't want two chairs matches on the same show. Now, some of you were thinking, well, why didn't they think about this going in? Well, don't ask me, but they didn't. So they've merged, and they also want to give all these matches some time. And the women's match, as of this weekend, was scheduled to be 8 minutes, which was the shortest scheduled match on the show. So in order to get everything onto the show, they merged Kane and Edge and Mysterio and Alberto into one big match, fatal four-way for the title, which will hopefully make it a better match as well and protect guys like Rey that are injured. So that was the reason for the main event change. So we'll give the predictions for that match and talk about all of the other matches on the show coming up here. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk professional wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. We're talking the TLC pay-per-view coming up moments after the show goes off the air. And Mike, your prediction for the fatal four-way, Kane, Edge, Rey, and Alberto Del Rio.
You know, as much as a little part of me wants it to be Alberto Del Rio, I think the title should probably just go ahead and stay on Kane. I mean, I could see Edge winning it, and then you do another Edge-Kane match. And they tried on SmackDown. One of the few parts of SmackDown I saw was they tried to play it up. Is that even Edge knows how ridiculous this whole thing has been. But you know, has followed him his entire career, knows how evil he is, and it's, you know, it was his time to play some mind games with him. But yeah, I mean, hopefully they just put this thing to bed. I don't know where you would go with all the guys after this or not, but I'm going to go ahead and say, for right now, Kane keeps the belt.
I would agree with that. There's, you know, there was a deal. Well, I guess it's not really a substitution, but back in the old days, if you had a match and it was a championship match and one of the guys on the card ended up being pulled and replaced with someone else, they'd often change the title. Or at the very least, they would, in a regular match, if a guy got replaced, the replacement would win. So the fans didn't feel that they were getting ripped off. This isn't really a replacement. It's just kind of an addition. And I don't know. I don't even know where they're going with this title. I don't see the point of it really being on Edge. I don't really see the point of it being on anybody. Maybe Alberto Del Rio just to make a new star. I don't see it on Rey. I don't know. It's kind of a belt that's in limbo. I don't even know like who's next in line for Kane. You know what I mean? Like I don't even know where they're going on this show really with anything.
Well, that's the biggest thing is where do any of these guys go afterwards when you try to think about it? And it's like, yeah, I mean, to me, in a way, as much as I see Del Rio have it, you know, for just because I like Del Rio, this is certainly not the time. I mean, to continue to keep him with kid gloves, I think it was probably going to be your best idea to try to showcase him the best you possibly can. Which there was another thing leading into this. Didn't Mysterio beat, you know, Del Rio going in? It's like, well, why did you want to see a chairs match with them anyway?
Exactly. We're going to head to our top of the hour break, everybody. We'll be back in 7 minutes. We'll run down the rest of the TLC pay-per-view. We got a lot of news, take some emails, perhaps some phone calls as well. Lots of stuff coming up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at our host site, WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking the TLC pay-per-view, all of the news in wrestling and MMA. And Mike, the pay-per-view this afternoon, we went over the world title match. There's also a WWE title match. It is The Miz versus Randy Orton in a tables match for the championship. And you know what that likely means? Randy Orton loses without getting pinned. And do you expect a swerve with Randy Orton retaining or regaining the title here today?
No, I do not. I just, you know, look, if what's his name? David Arquette went through the table on Monday. It is Alex Riley's turn to somehow screw Randy Orton and be put hard through the table.
Randy Orton is wrestling with a neck injury, and there is a chance that he may need to take some time off. We talk about plans all the time, and plans change on a regular basis. But I can tell you that the original idea was to do John Cena and Wade Barrett at the Royal Rumble. But they ended up pushing it forward here to TLC because, as noted, there is a chance that Randy Orton is going to have to take some time off. And if that's the case, the idea of bringing Triple H back, which had been pushed back to Royal Rumble, may be moved forward. So these things are all being done pretty much on the fly, depending on how people feel on any particular day. But I would not expect Randy Orton to win the title back here. I suppose anything is possible. But they are very, very happy with Miz. Miz has brought them a ridiculous amount of mainstream press, far more than they had expected, quite frankly. So I expect the belt to be on him for a while. And that's good, because I think Miz is doing a fine job.
Oh, he's doing a great job. And really, I mean, you know, waiting on bringing back Triple H until the Royal Rumble would have been pretty obvious. And realistically, there's, you know, more than enough people that people would be satisfied if they entered in the Royal Rumble as the surprise.
We got several other matches as well. Four more we've got to get into, including the John Cena Wade Barrett chairs match. So we're going to talk about those when we come back from the break. We also have a bunch of news. We have emails. We have a ton of emails to get into. So all of that is coming up in the next hour. Lots of stuff to talk about still here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. So we'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. And in fact, we're running down the WWE TLC pay-per-view, which is coming up this evening. We've talked about the two main matches, so let's get into the other big bouts on the card. John Cena, Wade Barrett, chairs match. What is a chairs match?
I just copious use of chairs and nothing else.
You know, I guess we'll find out tonight, but I always found the idea of TLC to be kind of ridiculous in the sense that I can remember a lot of ladder matches where more than a ladder has been used. How many times have we seen somebody put a ladder on top of somebody in a ladder match and then hit the ladder repeatedly with a chair? Shouldn't that be a disqualification? I don't know. Just kind of seems kind of weird that you can have a ladders match, but no one's allowed to go through a table in that ladder match. No one's allowed to hit somebody with a chair in a ladder match. What happens? They get disqualified in a ladder match?
I always wondered that too. Like the chairs match tonight. Now you can use a chair, but if the referee counts to five and you don't break a hold, are you disqualified? What if you use a closed fist? Will you be warned for a closed fist? Will the referee tell you don't use that closed fist? Go out there and get that chair.
Yeah, it's a new world out there, Mike.
A TNA world when it comes to having something for everything that's on a card and having themed pay-per-views to begin with.
I think it was the 90s that this all started, but, you know, more and more as the years go by, here's some philosophy for everybody. More and more as the years go by, I realize I'm getting old. I'm only 35, but in 35 years of, I haven't been a fan for 35 years, but I've been a fan for probably at least, 23 years. You know, in the last 23 years, this business has changed a lot. And, you know, a guy like Dave Meltzer, God bless him, he's 50 years old right now. Think of how much the business has changed in the 40 years he's been watching. And there was a day where, like, the idea was that everything needed to make sense. And the reason for that was because, at the time, there was this feeling that the marks, those being the fans, the marks didn't know that it was fake. And so if things didn't make sense, they might figure it out. And so when people put matches together or when they put storylines together, you know, I am a huge fan, obviously, of Jim Cornette, very old school. And the guy that trained me for pro wrestling, Buddy Wayne, he was trained by Rip Rogers. And you want to talk about a guy that goes out of his way to make sure everything makes sense, whether it be in a storyline or a match, it's Rip Rogers. I mean, the stories of Rip Rogers in Ohio Valley Wrestling, where he would just go nuts on guys when they came back through the curtain, and he'd say, why in the F did you do this, and this makes no sense, and this and that, and hammering into their head how important it was for there to be logic in these matches and these storylines. Man, all out the window right now. This stuff doesn't matter anymore. They totally don't care. And it can be rough for a guy like me who, you know, when I was coming up in wrestling, I started in 1998 and I worked with Buddy, and he would always be hammering stuff into my head. We'd be putting a match together and I'd suggest something and he said, now why would we do that? That makes no sense. That's stupid. And I go, man, you know, that does make no sense. And he'd put little storylines together for our independent matches and I'd make a suggestion and he'd go, and why would we do that? That makes no sense. That's stupid. And I go, yeah, you know, you're right. That is pretty stupid. And now, no thought is put into almost any of this stuff. I mean, the most thought you're going to see is in Ring of Honor, where coincidentally Jim Cornette is helping put stuff together. Who do you think was responsible for the majority of the Kings of Wrestling versus the Briscoes match last night? That was almost all Jim Cornette. He put that thing together and it made perfect sense. Like every spot in that match, there was a point to it. So it just kind of hard nowadays when you look at this stuff and it's like, you know, why would you have a chairs match? You know what I mean? That's so stupid. A chairs match where it's okay to use a chair, but presumably if you put somebody through a table in a chairs match, you're disqualified. That's so stupid, but that's just the way the wrestling business is nowadays, so we just have to accept it. I feel like that old, bitter guy now, that the youngsters, you know, the 20-year-olds listening to this show, they're like, shut up, Brian, who cares? Quit overthinking this stuff. Maybe they're right now, you know what I mean? Maybe the business has changed so much that they're right, but I have noticed that when wrestling promotions really put a lot of thought into storylines and angles and matches, and they really look for that logic and having everything make sense, it usually does lead to a better product. But sorry for that rant, everybody. Times have changed.
And you're right, because I wonder sometimes when I judge things, it's like, my God, have I done too many shows now with Les Thatcher? I mean, am I really at the age of 34 the same way? I mean, is this stuff really starting to pass me by too much? Am I missing something here? It's like, why? I mean, and the worst part is with WWE, if they put a little bit of that, we've talked about this, or at least I've bitched about this when it's come to the John Cena storyline with Nexus. I mean, even how this thing has ended, if Orton is going to be out and they need to push things up, and you had what you had on Monday night, if you put a little bit more thought into it, if you put a little bit more psychology into making people twist and turn a little bit, I mean, they did a good job of that with the Ron Killings thing at first and what way Cena was going to go, but a lot of it has been very pedestrian, and it's been like that up and down the card. You're substituting gimmicks for, if WWE, with the fact that the video packages can be so good and all of these things, if they just put a little bit of thought into it, it would make the show that much better. I mean, they always talk about how, we've had 9 billion trillion Raw shows in a row, the longest continuous programming. It's, it's amazing in a way because, they don't, as far as episodic TV, they do a very poor job of it. What's
horrible.
The reason that you keep wanting to come back to it?
Horrible. And, with Les Thatcher, for example, Les is right, I would say probably about 99% of the time. To me... And maybe this is I don't want to criticize Les because I love Les, but sometimes you just have to start accepting. And,
yeah.
And listen, I don't want people to take this the wrong way because I am as bad as anybody else when it comes to not being able to just accept the way things are. Because with TNA, years ago, I should have just accepted this. There is no reason for me to get mad about TNA in 2010 because I really should have learned my lesson years ago. But I still get mad about it, and I shouldn't. I should just accept that this is the wrestling business today. I shouldn't say that. This is TNA today. It's really stupid. It has its fans. They're going to accept it. They're going to lower their expectations enough that they accept TNA as a good wrestling television show. And I need to just live with that. But I still have a hard time with it. So I'm not even really criticizing Les right here, but when Les gets really upset about the way that wrestling is today, he, like I said, he's right 99% of the time, but really you almost just have to accept it as this is what the business has become because it's not going back. Like there are enough veteran old guys in WWE that you still get a little bit of this. Like, it's not like TNA where they've just completely given up. Like, there's nobody with a clue in TNA right now, so it's just completely nonsensical television. With WWE, there's still things here and there that it's a glimpse back to the way things used to be and when things were effective. But the problem is also, there's a lot of young guys, and most importantly, and this is the biggest problem, Vince McMahon just can't make up his mind. And that's why the Ron Killings thing is a great example. I mean, yeah, it seemed like they were going somewhere, and for a while there, it was fun to think, man, I wonder if Truth is going to turn on John Cena or if he's going to screw him in the end or something like that. But in the end, it just got dropped. And so when you've got so many storylines that you start to think about and you start to go, I wonder where this is going. I wonder if such and such is going to happen. And the next thing you know, it's just disappeared into the ether. After a while, it's like, why even bother thinking about where this stuff might go? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, but Brian, for me, it wasn't even that could he turn or what would happen with that. It was the accent mark on the bigger story in general. You know, it was having, having a rounded out story of, like, you've created some intrigue and you've had fallout from it. I mean, remember when, Michaels retired Ric Flair and then afterwards, you had people giving dirty looks to Shawn Michaels and stuff like that. I mean, they made it a completely round story of, like, with a little bit of intrigue in there, which they just don't do. I mean, they're just not putting thought into it to do it. And, you know, one of the places where
Mike, hold that thought. We're going to head to a break, and we'll talk more about this when we get back because I have more to say as well. So you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking one of the most popular subjects in pro wrestling nowadays, how much it sucks. No, seriously. We're talking about how much is different than it was back in the day, and obviously, there are some changes in wrestling that have been positive. Production is much better. They make a lot more money, at least in WWE. The wrestlers are making a lot more money nowadays. The top guys, you know, there are guys that when the time comes for them to go to Cauliflower Alley, they'll be going there in suits and they'll be wearing jewels, as opposed to, unfortunately, some of the guys today that are in very, very rough shape. There's a lot more money to be made in 2010. There are a lot of things about the business that are better, but at the same time, there are a lot of things about the business nowadays that are not better. And Mike, you were talking before the break, so I'll let you continue.
Well, it was just one of the things where Cornette is a test Thatcher a little bit is just that you know, I forget what interview it was, where he was just like, you know, it's 31 flavors. As long as I get my vanilla, I get my vanilla. And, you know, it's with Les, too. I mean, I would love to have Les work for a company if I start one. With that said, because he knows the formula. The formula doesn't change. All the things on the other side of it, I mean, you need to have somebody around you with a pulse on what's going on in society and what people actually want and those sorts of things, where that's where I think, you know, Les misses out, because, you know, things like Chikara and Dragon Gate, and, you know, they are overkill. You know, when you watch a whole show, you maybe not can't handle a whole thing, but having one or two matches on a show or something like that, I think is great. You give everyone their 31 flavors, as long as your main stuff is what sells everything, and as long as, you know, everything pretty much makes sense, you're fine. And that's the thing. Really, it's just making it all make sense and putting a little bit of thought into it again. And that's just, it's the frustrating thing with WWE. I mean, there's a lot of these, you know, stories and you know, that they have now, even if they're going to be short. Put more thought into them. I mean, obviously, I can't believe Superstars takes away that much thought, but, you know, look at SmackDown right now. Look at how, you know, where they've had to bail themselves out with Edge and Kane, and, you know, what happened with NXT and their complete lack of thought going into the original NXT as far as what they wanted it to be, and subsequently what's happened after it, to the point where now you have a fourth season with guys from Florida that, and granted, I don't think these guys should be on national TV. That's true. You know, they should be online. But the fact that that thing is online and no one cares, you know, says a lot. I mean, you told people not to give a crap about this, so they don't. And it's just frustrating all the way around. Is, you know, with TNA, you can throw your hands up. It doesn't make any sense to complain about it or put too much thought into it. It is what it is. I mean, Noah was the same way, even though I get frustrated thinking that, you know, 5 years ago they were running the Tokyo Dome. And because of a lot of things that they didn't want to change, you know, and granted there were some other events too, obviously, but they may not be around that much longer. It's frustrating, but there's nothing you can really do except for, you know, to continue to watch, and you just have to eat it for what it is. But when it comes to WWE, it's so frustrating because it happens so often, and they have all the power to not make it happen. I mean, talked about last week, SmackDown at least used to have at least one good match on there every week, if not a couple of good matches. You know, they were on that run there where, you know, Ziggler was looking better and he had some storylines all kind of interweaving with each other. You know, Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, Jack Swagger, triple threat ladder match for the IC title tonight. If you ask someone who even watches WWE on a regular basis cold right now, is there an Intercontinental title match, they wouldn't know if there's one on there or not, and odds are they may not even know who the champion is. And that's just, what's the point of doing any of this if you can't get people sucked in every week and actually, like, buying it every week?
You know, the big issue is, I was thinking about this, if you look back, let's look at the term mark. What is a mark? It's a derogatory term for wrestling fans. It's a carny term. It's your slack-jawed rube that was so stupid that you could fool him out of his money. And this was the term that was used for the fans for many years in this business. You know, these stupid marks and this and that. It was very, you know, a derisive term. And the whole deal is, like, even though most everybody in the business thought the fans were complete idiots and fools and marks, they still made sure when they did all their storylines and their matches to try to plug all the holes, just in case. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, these people are really stupid, and we can fool them, and we can make them believe this and that, but better make sure that we don't have this hole in the storyline here. The people might figure out that this stuff is not on the level. The funny thing is, like, nowadays, when supposedly, you know, the fans aren't considered marks anymore and this and that, the companies today, I think, have even less respect for the fans than they did back in the day, because they really think that people today are stupid. Like, they think that nobody is going to think about this stuff. They think that nobody is going to care at all about things making sense or any sort of logic. They think that nobody's going to remember anything. I mean, it almost seems like the respect level of the fans today is significantly lower among people in wrestling companies than it was back when they were referred to as marks and rubes.
Well, and that's it. And the thing is, too, I mean, you know, calling them marks and rubes back in the day, I mean, at the end of the day, no matter what you want to say about the marks, or hardcore people, they're the ones who are spending the money to get you paid. So when you, you know, throwing a shot at them is one thing. When the mainstream that tunes in every once in a while or something big happens and they watch and they don't come back the next week, I mean, that's where it affects your money. I mean, you want to try to drag all those people back in again. I mean, the hardcore, you know, fan base that a lot of these guys will, you know, vent against and make fun of and all that stuff, they're going to pay their money no matter what. It's, hey, guys, what happened to, you know, what's TLC going to do buy rate-wise? What's the reason? I mean, obviously, if you're a wrestling fan, a hardcore one, you're going to get it because it's wrestling. What's the reason for everybody else? How many buys is this thing going to do? How many buys have a lot of them done this year or in the last couple of years? I mean, you know, sans WrestleMania, sans Rumble, and, you know, what are they? You know, and obviously, you know, if you can explain that away, I mean, the fact is there's competition for the entertainment dollar anyway. That's not going away anytime soon either. And people, well, they've had to dumb things down because they've marketed towards kids. No, they haven't. You throw, you know, you don't have to use vulgar language or anything, but you can, a kid can understand the basics, but you throw something in there with, you know, for the parents, like Disney movies and things like that are so successful now because there's sight gags and things like that that make the person who's watching with the kid, you know, gets into it too. I mean, you don't have to dumb it down that much, so that's a bad excuse. I mean, well, everybody's, you know, competing for the entertainment dollar. Yes, that's true. But if you don't give people a reason to spend, then they're not going to spend it. I mean, there's plenty of places that are, you know, booming in business right now, even though that there's a fight for the entertainment dollar. I mean, it comes down to the product you're putting out there. And it's for a lot of the good things WWE has done. I mean, they have mailed it in badly when it comes to pay-per-views. I mean, why even run them? I mean, for God's sakes, obviously, you know why you need to do it. You can't take any off the schedule or anything like that, but give people a reason to buy the damn things, because who's going to buy this, and who's bought the last couple? They're going to wait till Monday to watch.
Well, the real big issue was, we'll get to John Cena and Wade Barrett. Actually, we were talking about it for the last 20 minutes, just not the match itself. Cena wrestling a month after Survivor Series when the big stipulation was he was freed or fired. Yeah, that's why no one's buying pay-per-views anymore, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, stips aren't selling pay-per-views anymore, and now the idea is we'll just throw out a bunch of extra stips. I mean, this show will do 90,000 buys in the United States, and that's horrendous. But, hey, that's wrestling nowadays. Let's run down the rest of the card here, because we've got a lot of stuff to get into. John Morrison and Sheamus in a ladder match for the number one contender. I predict a win by Morrison here. The Royal Rumble is a show that is sold on the Royal Rumble, and thus, traditionally, they've had weak matches, weak title matches on the show. I believe there was a Kurt Angle-Mark Henry match 1 year. I believe there was a Brock Lesnar-Bob Holly match 1 year. So, John Morrison against Miz in a battle of former tag team partners and Tough Enough alumni, especially if Tough Enough is coming back soon. Fine main event for the Royal Rumble, so I would expect that to be the championship match there.
Yeah, I think that would be the most obvious case, because obviously you're going to have Sheamus and Triple H at some point here, too. And, you know, this is one that's been going out since before King of the Ring and everything, and obviously it's been, you know, pretty much a placeholder for, you know, waiting on something to happen. But, you know, Sheamus and Morrison has actually been, you know, pretty good in something. They haven't put a ton of thought into it. They put, you know, they've just kind of put them out there and been ready to go, but, you know, they've had them wrestle on house shows and everything. It's just they put a little bit of thought into it. It's been a good placeholder.
Natalya and Beth against Lay Cool in a tables match, tag team diva tables match. Don't know where they'll go here, and I don't think it really matters all that much. I kind of thought that Lay Cool was going to lose since they won two slammies on Monday, and maybe that's where it's going to go, but there seems to be concern that you won't be able to put either of these women through a table because they're too skinny. So they don't want Beth hurt, which would leave Natalya as the most likely victim, but I guess we'll see.
I'd never like to see any damage done to Layla whatsoever, but at some point they're going to break up McCool and Layla. I mean, they've kind of hinted at before with possibilities of it. I just don't think it's going to be here, and I still think Beth Phoenix is going to end up turning on Natalya at some point. So why not have it be this one where she puts her through the table and they can feud over the title?
And finally, Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, and Jack Swagger triple threat ladder match for the Intercontinental title. Again, with wrestling today, it does not matter one bit who the champion is, and I'm sure it's going to be a fine ladder match. I hope no one gets killed, especially Dolph. He has a tendency to take terrible bumps and risk his life. But and I should say, everybody, do I expect this show to be bad? No. In fact, I think this is probably going to be a pretty darn good pay-per-view in the ring. With that said, good action is not selling pay-per-views nowadays. If it did, Dragon Gate USA and Ring of Honor would be doing much, much better than they are. So you need more. You need more than just good in-ring wrestling on pay-per-views. That is a very important part. You're not going to be able to sell pay-per-views if every pay-per-view sucks, but you're going to need more than good in-ring wrestling, especially when, for example, this week you've got 2 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, 2 hours of Tribute to the Troops, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, all free.
Incredibly fine point. Incredibly fine point. Nothing on there that's making you say, you know what, I want to give these people some money, too, for what they have coming up, for all this free goodness they've given me. No, not happening.
When we come back from the break, we are going to talk emails and news. We've got a lot of it, so we're going to get into that when we come back. And then wrap up the show and wish everybody a Merry Christmas holiday. Or Happy Holidays, I should say. I don't like to specify. But Happy Holidays, everybody. So we'll do that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news and info in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com, the number one website on the earth for combined pro wrestling and mixed martial arts content. We have daily news updates. We have tons and tons of radio shows. If you love this show and you only get to hear it once a week, well, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. We do daily shows. We do 15 to 20 total every single week, and I'm going to keep the plug short. Go to Observer.com, WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There is an interview with all three Briscoes. Listen to it. There are a couple of other free shows there as well. If you like what you hear, sign up. It's only $10.99. Now is a great time to ask the loved one in your life for a WrestlingObserver.com subscription for Christmas. You will, there's no better gift for a wrestling fan than WrestlingObserver.com. I firmly believe that. You will have radio to listen to every single day during your commute, at the gym. If you love wrestling audio and MMA audio, this is the website for you. So listen to the free shows. It's at WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. They're all there. They're all free. Click on them. And if you like what you hear, sign up. You'll get that every single day. Plus, our full archive is available for subscribers. If you sign up today, it's $10.99 for a full month. You not only get all of the new shows, but you get full unlimited access to the archive for the entire month. And we have every single show we have done since October of 2005 available in the archives. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of radio shows and even more hours of audio for you to listen to. You'll never get through it in a month. It's impossible. It literally is impossible. But check it out. Try it for a month. If you don't like it, you don't have to sign up again, but I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy yourself and become a long-term subscriber. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Let's jump into the mailbag here. You can always send emails to WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll go through as many as we can, and then we'll dip into the mailbag from weeks past as well. So here we go. This is from Sharon. What do you think of the recent accusations that Jeff has been allowed to wrestle impaired by TNA? Is that not setting TNA up for some serious issues legally down the road? Well, they've... Thing with Jeff Hardy is, I don't know what happened. And he showed up, they were concerned about him. He said that he was just exhausted, he was burned out, he had been doing a lot of travel, he'd gone to Abu Dhabi and back and been on the road nonstop. He took a nap, he woke up, he did the match, it was the exact same match he ever does, he looked totally fine. So I don't want to make any accusations, I don't know what happened right there. And, you know, if he was badly impaired and they put him in the ring and people know about it, then yes, that is setting them up for legal issues down the road. But again, I don't know what happened. Maybe he was just exhausted. But the point is, he got in the ring, he appeared to be fine, so I guess we just have to give them the benefit of the doubt in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, if he can't prove otherwise, and then the person he's working with is comfortable with it, I don't know what else you could say. I mean, yeah, I guess you could, you know, the first time they saw him, you know, somebody would have to make a hard decision. But, I mean, when it's come to... you know, hiring guys who are, you know, being accused of anything or being in the mix of anything like that, it's not like they've had the most sterling reputation anyway. So I don't know who would make the call. But then again, like you said, didn't seem to be anything wrong with him in the match. So he could have just been fatigued.
What was the backstory behind Edge winning the Intercontinental title from Jarrett at a house show in Toronto in the summer of 99? I heard a rumor he was surprised by the switch, did not know what was going to happen. Seemed out of place since WWE almost never switches titles at house shows. Well, they get in, it's very, very rare nowadays, but back then there was, every now and then Vince would get on this kick where, let's change a title at a house show and make people think house shows are important and more people will show up. And with this one, I remember it happening. I don't remember all the details. I think they just wanted to do a title change at a house show to convince people to buy tickets. And Edge was the right guy. He was in the right place at the right time. And I if there's more to the story, we'll talk about it next week. But I forget all the details.
Yeah, I don't think there was that big of a thing. I think it was just one of those changes. And yeah, it's been something they've done forever. I mean, I guess one of the bigger ones in the last couple of years or so, in the last 10 years or so, been the Harley Race, or not Harley Race, but the Vader Ron Simmons one in Baltimore.
This person here says, I have a
question. Heaven forbid they did that in Canada, too, with their thoughts, and really, they started it around then, too, but it's really gotten worse in the last decade, you know, decade and a half, where, you know, if you're in your hometown, you're going to be embarrassed no matter what.
Times have changed. This person says, my question is, do you think it is reasonable to... Oh, this is for the Observer Awards. It says, yet another great reason to sign up. The awards and subscriber interaction adds incredible value to the site. Louise says, my question is this. Do you think it is reasonable to vote for a wrestler who was significant to the indies this year for the Fez Flair Award? I think this award is generally reserved for WWE stars, but I don't think anyone in WWE has made a noticeable positive difference to business this year overall. Is it ever okay to vote for a worker influencing the indies considering the market dominance of WWE? Absolutely. It is not a WWE award. It is an award for the person that you think was the wrestler of the year and the most valuable person for their promotion. So if you think that somebody on the indies or somebody in Japan or something like that, TNA even, if you think that they were the most valuable person for their promotion, then yes, feel free to vote for them. It is totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, Hiroshi Tanahashi in New Japan over the last couple of years.
Mystico won.
Yeah, I mean, Mystico in CMLL, Brian Danielson or Nigel McGuinness in Ring of Honor. Yeah, I mean, you put it on a sliding scale, obviously, of course, but I mean, that's why the awards are... You know, the way they have them, where you do, you know, obviously the big showman, John Cena, and guys like that, the flashiest, you know, biggest guy wins one award, but then you have a, you know, the one who may be most valuable as country, you know, company winning the other one. It's something you should probably do in all sports when it comes down to what your most valuable player is, and then, you know, who the best player on a team actually is.
Matt here says, do you think TNA losing their TV coverage over here in the UK will badly affect their business? TNA has consistently pulled good to great numbers in the UK on Bravo. We're able to run tours on a regular basis as a result. I don't want to say that it's a disaster, but it's close to a disaster. This UK was the strongest market internationally, and that's counting the United States, by the way. It was by far their strongest market, and to lose TV over there is a huge, huge blow to TNA.
And it's one where, I mean, yeah, obviously if they don't get... time's going to tell. But realistically, if they don't get picked up or even get, you know, if they get picked up by somebody so much smaller where they lose that impact, I mean, time is certainly going to tell here.
Jeremy says it's looking more and more like Bischoff will have a major breakdown before the TNA goes down as a whole. He seems to be getting less and less stable, reminiscent of McMahon during the early NWO days, but without McMahon's confidence and resolve. Everybody that had success and lost success has gone a little bit nutty. I mean, Vince has lost his mind on occasions, it seems. Not gone clinically insane or anything like that, but you know what I mean. He's gone a little wacky. And Bischoff, you know, he's a focal point of a promotion that is not growing at all, and in some ways is losing ground. So yeah, I'm sure it's very, very tough for him, and he's handling it poorly. That's all I'll say about that. So I don't suspect like a major nervous breakdown that will require him to be committed or anything like that, but it's going to be rough for him.
No, and I think what's been, you know, it's been overstated a little bit, him calling into the podcast to rip the host and get into a name-calling thing and things like that. I mean, I think that was just him having, just kind of being a prick, and I guess heard it and just decided to take it out. I don't think it's any, you know, sign of instability or anything like that, but maybe a sign of immaturity more than instability. But, you know, again, he's not going to let himself, he's too smart of a dude. He's not going to break down because of the condition TNA's in. I mean, he's going to be certainly sane for as long as the check's clear, for God's sakes. It is a job. It's not his whole entire life, you know, that's being put into this.
This person says, any early ideas on buys for Final Battle? I actually don't have any sort of indication yet, except from our own site. As far as, like, the number of people that signed up as a result of our site was double those that ordered last time. And obviously, we had the Briscoes interview, which I think helped. But, you know, if there's a direct correlation between the number of people that signed up from our site last time and this time, then it would be about 3,000 buys. But I'm just throwing that number out there. I have no idea. I do know that, like, moments before the show was scheduled to go on the air, the Go Fight Live site crashed because so many people ordered at the last minute. So I would guess it was up from the last two shows. I think the shows did about 1,200 and 1,500 for the last two. So I hope this one does like 2,000, 3,000 buys because God knows all of the indies, the Dragon Gate USAs, the ROHs, the PWGs, you know, they need all the support they can get, especially here in 2010. So hopefully it did very, very well. But we'll have an update hopefully next week. I want to talk about some other news here very quickly before we wrap it up here today. Samoa Joe has signed with TNA. And Mike, are you surprised?
No, because no offense to the wrestling industry or somewhere. What else is he really going to do? Can you picture him in WWE? Is there interest there with him? No. On either one of those, you know, and he's, for what you want to say about how he's being used in TNA, you know, if that's the best paycheck he can get, makes the complete most sense. I mean, he's been in it for the art for a long time. If he wanted to do that again, and when he gets tired enough, he can always go back to ROH. I mean, that door is always going to be open for him no matter what, but it's not like he can make huge money in Japan or anything like that. That avenue's closed. This is the best thing for him.
Tell us about the TNA stars that are heading to the Tokyo Dome for the January 4th show.
Yes. In fact, on December 11th, Yujiro and Naito actually beat the Motor City Machine Guns, which has led into a bunch of matches that are now being set up for January 4th. Now, Kenny Omega obviously was not on the ROH card, apparently dislocated his ankle. He's going to be off the 1-4 show as well. That was supposed to be Koji Kanemoto and Taguchi, Raisuke Taguchi against Kenny Omega and Taichi. I'm not sure who's going to fill in for him there. But as far as the major players on the show, Rob Van Dam is coming in to face off against Toru Yano. A semi-main event guy in Toru Yano, I thought this was going to be a year more for him to break out. But he's a wacky, charismatic guy with, you know, a good amateur wrestling background and should actually have a really fun match with RVD. He's, you know, smart enough as far as, you know, being a little bit more in the Western style, shall we say, or in the American style. I think Yano will be able to pull it off quite well. TNA World Title match, Jeff Hardy against Tetsuya Naito, who a lot of people recognize along with Yujiro for being in CMLL over the last couple of years and being one of the big young shining lights, actually, for New Japan, not only in the junior division, but they're actually looking at him as a real heavyweight prospect who, you know, as far as charismatic, somebody that the fans can get into and have been getting into a little bit. New Japan's done a good job of building stars, and this is just going to be a little way you can showcase him. Obviously, he's not going to win the title from Jeff Hardy. If they do, everyone involved is absolutely insane here. But Hardy will win that. But that should be a pretty good match. Be a pretty good match as well. And then also James Storm and Robert Roode Beer Money is coming over for the IWGP three-way title match, which features Manabu Nakanishi and Strongman, the large, stiff-moving man from CMLL.
Didn't they win Tag Team of the Year?
And Bernard, the former Prince Albert and Carl Anderson.
Didn't they win Tag Team of the Year?
Who, Nakanishi and Strongman?
Yeah.
I would hope not. I don't remember if they won the Japanese awards or not.
I'm pretty sure they did.
That they could with Bernard and Anderson and, you know, a couple of the other teams they've had this year.
I'm almost positive they did. Let me go, let me find them right here. I was just, the idea that Strongman won one of the awards this year was, quite frankly, incredible to me.
Especially because he was only in there for, you know, a very short period of time this year, including a couple singles matches, and they've been running, like I said, the former Prince Albert and Carl Anderson have been in feuds with Naito and Yujiro and Nagata and, Christ, I'm forgetting who it was off the top of my head this year. I mean, there's been plenty of other teams.
Let's see here. Where is it? Eventual winners, Manabu Nakanishi and Strongman for Tag Team of the Year.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, Strongman! We got to go to a break, everybody. Chew on that. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. One final email question, then we'll wrap it up for today. This person here says, why did Larry Zbysko never return to New York after 1981? Was it because of his friendship with Bruno? And do you think a similar student-teacher feud would work today involving Daniel Bryan and HBK?
It was, money. They held up Vince McMahon, the McMahons, for money, but they sort of did. as far as leading into the Shea show. And obviously, Bruno being Bruno, you know, Zbysko was gone from there, went down to Georgia, did the thing with Killer Tim Brooks and, you know, buying that title, and then worked his way to the AWA and, you know, marrying Vern Gagne's daughter, so or however that worked out there. So, you know, the rest was history there, so he never had to go back, and he seems to be completely satisfied with that. But with that said, look, you can always do that with the right guys. You can always do that angle over and over. It's a timeless one, as long as it's not corny or anything else. When you do that one well, it can always pay off.
And that is going to do it for the show this week, everybody. In moments, WWE tables, ladders, and chairs on pay-per-view. If you purchase the show or if you don't purchase the show, Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live, ongoing play-by-play on the front page of the website. And later on tonight, after the show, Dave and I are going to be back, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, another hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts talk exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com for subscribers. We'll run down all the matches on the show, talk about all of the angles, Raw tomorrow, where they're heading leading into the Royal Rumble, and a lot more that's coming up on the website. Next week, we will be off due to the Christmas holiday, so we'll have a replay version of the show, but I suspect we'll be back the week after with a brand new episode of the show on January 2nd, talking about the previous night's UFC and a lot of news heading into WWE's Royal Rumble. So hopefully everybody has a great holiday season and a wonderful new year. I want to thank everybody for the last year here on the show. Mike, of course, all the people from Sports Byline USA, and of course, all of you, the listeners. So we'll talk to you in 2011. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network.